You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national. We cover down on all the issues. And like that dude just said, yep, solid conservative and just plain right. Well, I'm finishing up a segment of the Triple Dipper here I call Trump Derangement Syndrome, all related to the recent indictment and arraignment of former President Donald Trump. And, you know, he gave a speech last night, too. He wasn't playing. He flew back. I find it kind of interesting, too. He literally got out of his, you know, left his estate in Mar-a-Lago, flew in his plane to New York, went to the courthouse, got back on his plane, flew back to Florida, and had a huge celebration. That's kind of a day in the life of Donald Trump. But this is still an unusual day. It's an unusual day, too, for America. So I thought, you know what, I'm going to ask for somebody to come on who's got more. I mean, I'm an attorney, but I practice, my practice has been solely civil law. So Jay Towne is about to come on, former U.S. attorney for the Northern District of Alabama, appointed there by President Trump himself, confirmed by the Senate in 2017. Prior to that, he had been a senior prosecutor in the Madison County District Attorney's Office in private practice now. Also, by the way, a judge advocate general in the U.S. Marine Corps. So that being said, let me just bring him on. Jay Towne, how you doing, man?
Phil, thanks for having me on, man. I'm doing well. How are you today?
I'm good. Thanks.
Weird day for the country.
Weird day indeed. Well, I tell you what, just give me your perspective as a prosecutor. I mean, just give me your thoughts on this actual indictment, and then I got a few questions for you.
Well, first, I think it's important to say that any prosecutor has to consider certain equities when they are bringing a charge against any defendant. And the biggest one is, was a crime committed, and can I prove it beyond a reasonable doubt? And if the answer to either of those questions is no, then you don't bring an indictment. But there are also other equities that need to be considered, especially when you're dealing with a unique and historic, historic prosecution of a former president of the United States. And I think those were equities that were ill-considered by Alvin Bragg, the Manhattan DA. And, you know, on top of that, and you mentioned the grand jury indictment, transparency in prosecutions is vital to allowing full faith, trust, and confidence in what the prosecution is doing, whether it's the state, the county, or the feds. And what we read yesterday, this 34-count indictment brought by Alvin Bragg, was anything but transparent. Even the statement of facts were perhaps the worst statement of facts that I've ever read in my 24 years, going on 25 now, of being a prosecutor and being in law enforcement and being a lawyer. And so, you know, transparency in prosecutions is critical in our system of justice. And we wake up today not knowing what laws the former president of the United States, who's been charged with 34 felony counts in the state of New York, we don't know what laws he's broken, or how, or why. And that should concern all of us. And another equity that I think is important that Bragg missed, whiffed on completely, is that, and I mentioned trust and confidence in the justice system by the populace. And by bringing a flimsy prosecution against the former President Trump, political enemy of the left, current candidate for president of the United States, opposite of the current president of the United States, Bragg has jeopardized that trust, that confidence in all of the other cases that not only he's prosecuting in Manhattan, but indeed the cases being prosecuted around the country. Folks are wondering, well, is the system targeting folks or is it targeting criminal misconduct?
Yeah.
Is the system fair? Is it fair for everyone? And we've been hearing a lot about that since really, I mean, going all the way back to Baltimore and the Freddie Gray case, but, you know, also Derek Chauvin case in Minneapolis, George Floyd, 2020, the summer of unrest. And, you know, is our justice system fair? And as much as Alvin Bragg would like to believe that he is on the good guy side of the justice system, he has done a lot of damage to the trust and confidence that people in this country have in our justice system by doing what he's done. And part of that is because most people believe that this is a political prosecution. Most people of any sort of credible ilk in the law believe this is a flimsy case. This isn't what you prosecute former presidents for sure. Nobody's above the law, but nobody's beneath it either. And so when you're using your prosecutorial discretion, you have to ask yourself, okay, maybe I think he broke the law, but am I going to damage all the other cases that are really important where people are dead, people have holes in them, people have guns shoved in their face, right? And those cases really matter to those victims of crime, right? These are paper victims in the Trump case.
Yeah.
Real victims, those cases matter to them more than, and they matter to me more than as a citizen, as a former prosecutor, than a paper case. And so are we damaging those cases? That's something Bragg didn't consider. And finally, we lecture the world when governments jail their political enemies.
Yeah.
We go on and on about the virtues of democracy around the world when those situations occur. Because we can no longer do that because there's at least that perception now around the world that the United States does it too. Don't you point your finger at us because you guys have jailed one of your political opponents as well. So you don't get to lecture me about the virtues of democracy and federalism and capitalism and how wonderful the United States is because you have done exactly what you're accusing us, you know, some authoritarian dictatorship of doing. And so that really, those three points to me mean the most. Those are the ones that sting the most to me. We can talk about all the defenses that Trump has, all the holes in the indictment, some of the ridiculous sort of theories of prosecution here. And those are important, right? Due process takes care of all of that. Jury takes care of that. Motions to dismiss take care of that. But what's still going to be left in the wake of Alvin Bragg and his decision to bring this indictment are the ill-considered equities that I just mentioned and the damage that he has done to our justice system, not just in Manhattan, but around the country, and indeed the way people view our democracy around the world. And that is troubling to me.
Wow, that is so well said. Great summation. Let me ask you a couple of questions. In your experience, now, we have 34 counts, allegedly. I've got a copy of it right here in front of me. I've read through it. Not even being a prosecutor myself, I read through it and just almost had to chuckle, but then also feel sad at the same time because it's 34 counts, but it's really one count that's been sliced up 34 times. And
correct.
And I recognize you have in co-ed crimes, you have the underlying crime that had to occur for the big felony to have, you know, be charged also or something, you know, they wrap together. This isn't that. I mean, is it strike you as being just like almost abusive or abuse of his discretion to slice it up 34 times and make each one a standalone felony?
It's called stacking.
Yeah,
is what it is. It's done to give the perception that this guy must have done something. Now, here's the thing about this type of stacking is that it's all, like as you mentioned, it's really one count. You could maybe divide it into three counts because there were three sort of stories about Trump that were hushed, 30,000 to the doorman,
right.
130 to Stormy Daniels, and 150 to McDougal. So you could maybe argue three counts. But okay, all right, whatever, 3, 1, 34. When you stack counts like this, what you're trying to show, really, this is for the pundits. This is for people like us to talk about. People on the left to sort of froth about, right, with their sort of breathless punditry of how awful this must have all been for the state of New York to have to endure these 34 crimes. 11 of these offenses is Michael Cohen sending the bill to the Trump Organization
right.
to get paid.
Right.
11 of the 34, a third of them, right? And then there happened to be two vouchers on the very first payment. They for whatever reason, there was sort of a mishandling of it. And that's why you get to 34 counts. It's really 11 different instances of 11 different payments. And then there's a charge for every invoice that was sent, every voucher that was generated, and then every check that was cut in payment of that invoice. And so it is, you know, if you're a prosecutor who's been in court, And you've prosecuted, as I have, well over 10,000 defendants. I don't want to prove 34 counts to a jury. I'm going to be there for 9 weeks doing it. I want to prove one or three, and I'll be there for 9 days. I'm going to get the same sentence. It's the same body of work. The state of New York still has this, you know, I think it's roughly $480,000 because they grossed up the payment to cover the taxes that Cohen would, because he was getting this as income, so they were covering his taxes too. So, but the state of New York got all of its money, right? Yeah. Nobody's out any tax dollars. Michael Cohen's not out any money, so he's not some victim of some scam or some fraud or a failure to pay or a theft by Trump by misappropriation. And so it is incredible that a prosecutor would want to bring 34 counts. And the problem with all 34 is if one element of count one,
yes,
or count seven is not proven, then that element exists in all 34 counts. And therefore, all 34 counts are an acquittal.
Well,
go ahead.
We're going to run out of time, but I mean, you're unpacking this so well. But let me ask you this: a couple more things that I know my audience is going to want to know. Number one, there has been talk; it has not happened yet. There has been talk about whether there would be a potential for a gag order. Can a gag order even apply in a situation like this, especially when you have a political candidate who may have to answer questions because his opponents want to use it against him? How does this? Can you do a gag order in something like this?
Well, the judge could, but it would be taken to federal court immediately and overturned.
Okay.
I mean, this is a guy who's part of his political platform, as you know, as we know, as your audience knows, is that he's running on, you know, the deep state and the unfairness in the justice system that's been targeting him. That's one of the planks in his platform. And so now you're telling him he can't talk about those things, right? And he's a citizen that's presumed innocent, and he's been accused of something. And now you're telling, now if Trump is out there, you know, publishing the address of grand jurors and jurors and, you know, the prosecutors and things like that, and trying to intimidate witnesses, that's very different.
Yeah.
It's against the law, A, but B, it does influence the trial, and that shouldn't happen either. But if he's just critical of this whole thing, as I am, then I just don't see a judge ever submitting a gag order in this case. And,
okay.
And if he did, I don't see a federal court, even the First Circuit and the Second Circuit, the Second Circuit is New York, they're going to overturn it because the First Amendment is just too powerful here.
All right, so let me ask you, with about 45 seconds left to go here, do you foresee if the case survives a motion to dismiss, do you foresee any possibility of a motion to change the venue or for the judge to recuse?
I think you're going to see a flurry of all those motions at the same time. That would be the wise strategy by the defense team, because if they lose on one, the judge could cut them a husk and say, okay, but we're going to move this to Staten Island. We're going to get it out of Manhattan. And that's a more friendly demographic for Trump over in Staten Island. They vote red for the most part. At least you're going to have a Republican. You're going to have a Trump supporter perhaps in the Vanira, maybe not on the jury. But in Manhattan, it's just going to be blue and people saying they can be fair. But, you know, we both know that people like they want to be on this jury.
Wow.
And so you got to be really careful in voir dire.
Well, Jay Towne, I tell you what, man, I'm going to keep you on speed dial because I imagine this is going to be a topic that we're going to have on the air off and on for the next several months. But I really appreciate your time today. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Phil.
All right. Take care. All right. Ran long on purpose because that was just too good to let go of. But that's Jay Towne. Former Madison County senior prosecutor and U.S. attorney for the Northern District of Alabama. Long history of prosecutions, looking at this thing through the lens of someone who's done it before and trying to figure out how Bragg thinks he's going to keep it going. All right, there you go. Trump derangement syndrome. My word, could they get any worse? Oh, I hate to ask that question because who knows? With them, anything's possible. You guys stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid and conservative and just plain right, saving the world one soundbite at a time. Man, text lines, I was looking over and I'm like, okay, when did these all come in?
Don't forget about them.
But like, good Lord, boom. Yeah, we got so many people now in our texting system that it's just amazing to me that this is just going like it is. Like, let's see what we got here. I'll just read a few of them. Russell from Rural Route 1 in Alabama. He says, what do you think would happen to Trump supporters if they found out where the judge lives and started protesting in front of his house? Just like the crazies have been doing to conservative Supreme Court justices. Great point. And let me take that and run with it a second, Russell. Thanks for bringing that up. So his point is this. What if we find out where this judge lives and we go protest just like they do outside of, well, first of all, don't. Don't. It's a violation of the law. Don't do it. I don't care if Democrats do it. Don't do it. There's going to be a lot of things happening in days to come. A lot of things being said. And I just, you know what? Don't be that guy. And don't, by the way, don't be like those guys. And so I, you know, speak out. Absolutely. Civil unrest. No. Civil discourse. Yes. You want to make your point, make your point. Don't make your point in a way that's going to wind up bringing dishonor to the cause, or for that matter, dishonor to you, your family, and maybe even a jail cell. So don't do it. What else we got here? Bob from Decatur. Only a Democrat could brag on someone like Bragg. If you look up travesty of justice in your Funkin' Wagnalls, there's a picture of Twinkie. Calls him Twinkie. That's from yesterday. Weren't you the one that called him Twinkie?
Yeah, Mr. Twinkie.
Yeah. you apparently coined a phrase. So otherwise, known Mr. as Alvin Twinkie. Bragg. Yeah, Alvin Twinkie. There he is. Thank you,
Alvin
Boomer.
Alvin Twinkie.
Oh, gosh. John from Pike Road says, with the judge being a Democrat, his daughter worked on Kamala's campaign and the demographics of New York, I cannot see the judge dismissing this, agreeing to a change of venue of President Trump getting a fair trial or President Trump getting a fair trial by a jury. That's the concern, certainly the concern. Now, at some point, though, this judge realizes he's under a microscope, John. So my hope is that despite his obvious predilections to the Democrat Party, despite the fact that this is in his court and it's big doings, he's still at some point going to have to answer to a Supreme Court. Because I'm going to tell you right now, everything that he denies, Trump has a right to appeal. The thing called a writ of mandamus, or mandamus, depending on who you ask. But the writ is basically when you say, hey, that thing that happened in the middle of our proceedings, stop what we're doing. We want the Supreme Court to say whether that thing should have been allowed or not allowed. I'm telling you right now, this is going to get dragged six ways to Sunday. That judge may want to dismiss it just to get it out of his courtroom. Who knows? Chuck from Oneida, Tennessee. Why don't conservative USDAs go after Biden and his family? No doubt they've committed crimes. It's hard and dogmatic, just like they have. So I guess the bottom line for this, Chuck, is most of our, you know, conservative Republican DAs have more respect for the law than Alvin Bragg does. Alvin Twinkie. All right, there it is. Heading to a break. We're coming right back. I'm switching gears, number two on the Triple Dipper. I'm calling it Keep Your Head on a Swivel. In other words, what other news is out there we need to be aware of? Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back.